Good morning. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Homer.
Hey, Homer.
I'm grateful to be here this morning, and truly grateful to be sober. And I am always kind of in awe with the Episcopal community. Now, I do cooperation with professional community and public information work for Alcoholics Anonymous locally, and I have done that also on statewide. In the Episcopal Church, in about 8 years of doing this kind of work, the Episcopal Church is the only church, other than being in an AA meeting, that we have ever participated. And we will be participating again with your North Carolina convention coming up in a couple weeks here in Winston-Salem. So first of all, I want to thank you guys for your openness and your willingness to help us carry the message. My sobriety date is December the 10th, 1995. Really interesting, I got I picked up my white chip at St. Paul's meeting 19 years, 11 months, and 10 days ago, or 2 days ago. So I have a special relationship with St. Paul's because this is where I started my journey. I currently serve on the local AA community that is responsible for public information in cooperation with the professional community. And I'd like to specifically thank Joy and Joe Kaiser in inviting me and asking us as AA to put this program together. This week, I'll do just about a 10-minute overview of AA and kind of, you know, what is AA and how do we work, and then a few of the resources that are available. But then the next three speakers are the kind of the meat in the program. Joy will be talking about Al-Anon today, and then next week I have a woman member of Alcoholics Anonymous who will tell her story, and I have a member of the Young People's Group here in Winston-Salem. He's been in that Young People's Group now about 10 years, so he's not quite as young as he was when he started in the program. But he will be. They will be our speakers next week. Our program in Alcoholics Anonymous is really about two things. One, helping us stay sober. You know, I'm here today so that I stay sober and to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic, and that's a vital piece of AA service work. You know, we stay sober by helping other people get sober and stay sober. Just a couple of disclaimers. I do not represent Alcoholics Anonymous, nor do I speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I said, and I'm here to share my experience in carrying the message in these kind of environments. You know, AA just recently celebrated its 80th anniversary last June. I have a copy of the big book, and the original version was published in 75 years ago, and the first 164 pages of that book are exactly the same as they were written 75 years ago. AA was started by a New York stockbroker and an alcoholic doctor in Akron, Ohio. Today we have over 2 million members worldwide, and recovery from alcoholism is our primary purpose. You know, we're self-supporting through our own contributions. We do not take contributions or donations from any outside organization. We're not a professional organization. We're not a community service organization. And we have but one primary purpose: recovery from alcoholism for us and those who suffer. We have a very important principle on anonymity, and we are particularly anonymous specifically anonymous at the level of press, radio, and film. So as long as no one in here is recording what I'm saying as an alcoholic, I have no fear of press, radio, and films with this group. I lost my job as a result of my, well, I didn't lose my job. I resigned rather than participate in the investigation of my behavior at my last drunk, and I haven't gone back to work since. So I'm not worried about anonymity from that perspective. But we have anonymity protection for two reasons. One, so that the newcomer feels comfortable in coming. But probably even more important is that we alcoholics tend to have an ego, okay? And, you know, the last thing AA needs is a bunch of homers running around espousing publicly the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and being on Oprah and all of those kind of programs. We believe in cooperation, not affiliation, and that's the kind of event we're having today. We believe in cooperation and not competition. We have a principle of attraction and not promotion. And we base our program on principles and not personalities. There are several resources that are really essential, and I've asked Joe and another person to pass out a little business card, and I want to talk just a little bit about the resources that are available to alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's see here. I'm not going to be able to see, but I think I know what's up there. If you don't remember anything what I say here today, now when Joy and the other people speak, I hope you remember what they say. But my message today, if you walk out of here with one memory and one recall, I will have had a successful day. Alcoholics Anonymous today is resource rich. Okay, we have resources for everything. And each of you have a copy of a card. And all of these pamphlets that are over here, all the information that is that I'll share with you is available through AA.org. Okay? Now, let's say, where can you find everything?
AA.org.
If you remember that, and you have a friend, a loved one, or even if you decide you want more information on Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery, all you have to do is go to AA.org, and all of the pamphlets are there. Okay. Am I concerned about my drinking? There's the infamous 12-question pamphlet, and it's over here if you want to take a look at the full pamphlet, right? But the good news is, it says it's AA for you. AA in young people, AA in women, AA in African-American. AA. Do you think you're different? Gay and lesbian. Native American, older alcoholic, I can relate to that one. Let's see, alcoholic with special needs. Young people, teenagers. So regardless of where you fit in the population category, Alcoholics Anonymous has a resource available to you, okay? And here's the full list. And by the way, we have almost 90 pamphlets. We're really good at publishing. We have our own publishing company. We're not very good about culling them out. So you will be, you know, you can see the variety of choices that we have. Now, the next important thing is, how do you find help? Okay. In Winston-Salem, see if I can get this, I can't get it back down. Anyway, the Winston-Salem site is available, and all you got to remember is w-saa.org, okay? And it has all of the meeting schedules. And that the website is actually on that business card. It also has a phone number. We man the phone number 24 hours a day. But I can tell you, in this technological age, most of our requests for help are coming through requests by email through a couple of websites where people reach out for help. Okay. The other thing that I want to just talk a little bit about is the Al-Anon resource. And here is the local website. This will get you to the local meeting. The beautiful thing in this day and age, all you got to do is just do a search. Al-Anon, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and it'll take you directly to this website. Okay. The other thing that I'd like to do is, you know, there's sort of some universal principles in Alcoholics Anonymous that help people who want to learn more about it, and who you may, you know, you may have a loved one or you may have a friend. You know, the first thing you want to do is you want to go to an open AA meeting. There's two kinds of meetings, open and closed. Anyone can go to an open AA meeting, okay? Now, the meeting that meets here on Wednesday night is a closed meeting, okay? Sunday morning, there's a 9 o'clock meeting. All you have to do is go to the meeting schedule, and it'll either say O or C, okay? Now, when it's closed, that means that we don't, doesn't mean that we don't any longer accept members. It just means that it's limited to persons who have a desire to stop drinking or who admit they're an alcoholic. And we have closed meetings for two reasons, okay? One is so that the newcomer will feel comfortable coming there and knowing that everyone there has the same problem they do. And the other reason is just the added level of anonymity. You know, I do online answering service, and although women make up one-third of the population of AA today, two-thirds to three-fourths of the requests for help online come from women because they like the added level of anonymity, you know, and so it's important that we provide that anonymity. There's three pieces of literature that are essential, okay, and one is the infamous 12 questions. I lied on 8 of them and it still told me I was an alcoholic, okay? This little simple sheet, AA at a glance. The meeting schedule, okay? And then to settle all questions, there is a 8.5 by 11 and it says information on Alcoholics Anonymous. For anyone new coming to AA, and for anyone referring someone to AA. So as I said earlier, we have an abundance of literature that answers every question. You know, if you're trying to help somebody, get a specific phone number. Go to that open meeting and get a number. If it's you're trying to refer a male, get a male's phone number or get a female's phone number. I've left my business card up here that has the AA information that you have on that card, but on the flip side is my personal contact information, and you're welcome to take that. Be sure, you know, and if you go to an open meeting, you'll be able to refer that person based on your experience. And if you're a professional, deal with the consequences of continued drinking. I don't know anybody that got to Alcoholics Anonymous skipping and singing. We all got here as a result of consequences. And so that's how we see helping you make an effective referral. I have an 8.5 by 11 over here on this table, and I would encourage you to pick it up. When I was asked to do this event, I have at times attended a lot of Al-Anon meetings, because I have a lot of alcoholics in my life, and I found that Al-Anon taught me how to live with those alcoholics, whether they were drinking or sober, but I hadn't been in a while. And I was trying to think, who was I going to do? At a Sunday morning open meeting, it was an Al-Anon topic. And the first person that shared, I listened carefully to what she had and what she shared. And I said, God put that person here today. And I'd like to introduce Joy, a member of Al-Anon in Winston-Salem. Joy, come on up and share your story. Looks like you've got about 15 minutes, and that'll give us 10 minutes. Okay.
Good morning. My name is Joy, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. Hi, I'm grateful to be here today. Super excited and a little nervous, too. I'd just like to pause and have a moment of silence and prayer. Amen. So I have to be honest, that's part of my program, is to show up and tell the truth. And when Homer asked me to do this, I was elated and fearful. And anytime I feel fear today, I take it as a sign from God. So I told him I needed to go home and think about it, talk to my sponsor, and reflect on whether or not this is something I felt like I was in a position to do. And I did that. And then this morning when I woke up, I still didn't know if it was a very good idea. And I thought about hiding and turning back over and hitting the snooze button again. But like I said, part of what I do today when I'm confused or fearful is just show up and tell the truth. And that's gotten me here today. So I've already done half of it, so I'm half done. I want to tell you what got me to Al-Anon and tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I grew up in a family of three girls. I was the middle child, and there was no alcoholic drinking in my home. I had a very happy childhood, very safe and nurturing relationship with my mother, who was the primary caregiver, and not that nurturing relationship with my father. He was the breadwinner and supported us. I felt, like I said, happy and safe in my home, and I didn't think there were any problems until I turned 15 and my dad asked my mom for a divorce. And that was devastating because the fact that there were any problems was very hidden from us as children. And I didn't really identify it at the time or for many, many years after that. But as a result of getting to Al-Anon and working my program, I realized at that point in my life, I turned my back on God. And the reason for that was I saw how my mom was suffering and I saw the fear. And I decided that I never wanted to live like that. I never wanted to be in a position where I felt insecure and unable to support myself and my children the way she was. And so I decided then I was going to be completely financially independent and completely self-reliant. And of course, I couldn't identify that as turning my back on God, but that's exactly what I did because I put it all on myself. And that's what ego is, edging God out. And he didn't have a place in my life at the forefront. So not only that, but I also decided that I wasn't going to trust a man because I saw what that did to my mother and father's relationship. And ultimately, they didn't get divorced. They stayed together after a summer of turmoil. He came back and said, I made a mistake, take me back. And I resented my father very much for doing that to my mom, and I resented my mother for taking him back. So neither one of them could win in my book. I heard two very conflicting messages from my parents growing up. And the message that I heard from my father was, do as I say, not as I do, and you won't go to hell like me. And the message that I got from my mother, who was the more religious of the two parents in my household, was, do as I say, exactly as I say, and you're not allowed to do anything that I don't say, and you get to go to heaven like me, but you get to live in hell first. And I went on, and my answer to almost everything in life from very early on was achieve. You know, I could achieve my way out of everything. And today I realize that I'm a recovering perfectionist and a recovering workaholic. Work was the number one priority in my life for many, many years. And even after I had children, I still put my work over everybody else in my life because I justify that by saying I'm the breadwinner, I have to support them, so anything that I do in the name of work is okay. And it wasn't okay. A lot of the choices that I made were not healthy and were not helpful. So I married my husband. That's the relationship that brought me to Al-Anon, was my alcoholic marriage. And I married my husband. I was working. It was after college, and I didn't know that he was an alcoholic when I married him. I had kind of a gut feel that something was wrong in our relationship, but I went forward anyway. That's part of my problem. I get into a situation, and even if I recognize that it may not be totally right, I'm such a people pleaser that I couldn't turn around and say, wait a minute, stop, I'm not sure if I should do this. And I think I had one moment of that very, very serious doubt, but everything was already paid for the wedding. And it was most of it was paid for by his parents. So it would have been a big deal for me to back out at that point. And I believe today that that was God's plan for me to marry and have two children. And I believe it was also God's plan for me to leave that relationship. But my children are the greatest gift in my life, and I believe that God wanted them on this earth, and that's why he brought us together. So I didn't see the drinking as being a problem, partially because I was drinking right along with him. I worked in a very work-hard, play-hard industry, and I didn't see anything wrong with that. In fact, I thought the opposite. I thought there was something wrong with people who didn't drink. They were scarier to me, the teetotalers in my family. And I didn't really want any part of that. I could play the game when I was with them. You know, I could laugh with the sinners and cry with the saints. It just depended on who I was with, which hat I would put on for you. And it's a disease of perception. Alcoholism is a disease, a family disease of perception. And I heard it described this way, that alcoholism is like a wet dog shaking its fur. When that dog shakes its fur, drops of water go everywhere, and it gets on everybody in the family. So we get married, and I got pregnant right away, unexpectedly. So Lily was a surprise. And it was 2 months into the marriage, so we didn't really have any time to adjust to married life, and it was game on. Like, that was the catalyst to change in my life. I stopped drinking, of course, I was pregnant, but I, more than that, it was bigger for me. I knew that I wanted my life to change. Like, I had a greater responsibility to be a better person at this point, and I started making changes. And it was only when I stopped drinking with him and started making some of those changes that I started observing that he did not, or seemingly could not. And I remember that moment, sitting down on my bed and thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do about this? And for the next 7 years, that was the mission. How am I going to fix him? And the tools that I used to do that weren't effective. I was his mother, I was his judge, his jury, and his executioner. And what I thought I was being was a good wife and a good mother. And I think, you know, to some degree, part of my process and my journey has been in Al-Anon, that when I got here, I blamed him for everything. Everything was his fault. If he could just do this, 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 and this, everything would be perfect. And I kind of went through a period where I just like seesawed the other way. Like, oh, I'm the horrible person. If I just had treated him with unconditional love the whole time, things would have worked out differently. I don't believe that today. I kind of think of it as like a Rorschach test. You know, if I had done the complete opposite action at every step along the way, we still would have ended up here. Because ultimately what I've learned is his drinking has nothing to do with me. It is he's not drinking at me. He's doing it to fill a hole in the soul. And many people try to fill that hole with many different things. It could be booze, it could be drugs, sex, power, money, food. But the problem is it's a God-shaped hole. And I heard this, actually the first time I heard that concept was in a book. When he was in one of the rehabs that he attended, I decided to try to educate myself, and I read this really great book called Broken. And it was the first thing that I read that gave me any empathy into what it might be like to be an alcoholic. And he talked about that concept, the hole in the soul, and I remember thinking, that's it. That's what he has. He has a hole in the soul, and we need to fix that. It never even occurred to me that I might have a hole in my soul. I might want to work on fixing that first. But I eventually got there. So by the time he was in his fourth rehab, I got serious about it. Like, early on, I was just kind of giving him ultimatums and saying, quit drinking or else. And I was the bait, right? It's like, you do this or else you lose me. Sure, you don't want to do that. But it didn't work. But he got to this fourth place, and I decided it was time for me to get involved. And I was willing to show up and listen to what somebody else had to say for maybe the first time in my life. I mean, I would listen to people, and it was always like, yes, yes, I hear you, I hear you. Thank you for sharing. And I'd go and do whatever the heck I wanted. My plan was always better. I noticed that brochure you put up, Homer, and it was do you think you're different? And I rephrased it. My version would be, do you think you're exceptional? That would be my version. And I did. And I was an egomaniac with an insecurity complex. I was running on fear that I had to be the best at everything that I undertook. So I get to an early recovery group in this rehab facility, and like I said, I was willing. My brain opened a tiny, tiny crack, and I was willing to listen, but I was only willing to listen to these three people because I was convinced they had the answer. So I was still looking on how to fix it. How do I fix this? And that started me on my journey. One of the requirements for being a part of that group was to attend Al-Anon meetings. And I need to back up a second and say that I find this very amusing. God works in mysterious and often hysterical ways when I see something that he puts in my path that's so obvious, even me in my like self-absorption can't miss it. And he often gives me these little jokes, and I think, okay, I get it. Thanks, God. That's very funny. The first person that told me about Al-Anon was my first alcoholic boyfriend, the worst one. He was into all kinds of things. And we were talking, actually, on the phone at one of my ex-husband's rehab stints, and he had been sober for 4 years, he told me at that point. And I was amazed. Like, that in itself was a miracle. If he could get sober, anybody could get sober. So it gave me hope, but he also suggested Al-Anon. And I remember thinking, right, Al-Anon, I'll get right on that, because I'm the one with the problem. And it didn't take too long that I got there. You know, I didn't get myself there. God got me there. So I'm in this group, and I learned a lot of things. I remember reading the 12 steps for the first time. They were up on the wall, and I remember kind of going down the list, and the person leading that group often said, you know, the 12 steps, if you take the alcoholism part out of it, they are a guide to good living. And that stuck with me, and I could work with that. I still didn't think they were for me. I thought they were for the alcoholic to do, especially when I read steps 8 and 9. 8 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9 is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And when I read those, I was like, sweet, I can't wait till he gets to those steps because he's got a lot of amends to make to me. And that hasn't actually happened, and I'm okay with that. And I say that, but in a way it has, because as I have changed, one of the things that I've learned in Al-Anon that my sponsor taught me is a simple equation of A plus B equals C. And something I learned before that is the 3 C's, which is fundamental to our program in Al-Anon. The 3 C's are I didn't cause it, I can't control it, and I can't cure it. But I can contribute to it in a positive or a negative way. And A plus B equals C. If I can't change B, but if I'm A, I can change A, and C cannot stay the same. So as I have grown and I have approached things in a more rational, loving manner, I have a great relationship with my ex today. And that wouldn't be possible for me without this program, because I was a rageaholic just looking for an excuse to blow up during that chaos and that period of time. So they made us go to Al-Anon, and I stayed in that early recovery group long enough to realize that whatever the question was, the answer was usually go to a meeting. So I'm like, well, maybe I should do that. So I found a home group. My home group is Hope in Advance, North Carolina, and we meet every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and you're welcome to join us. We would love to have you there. The things that I found there are unconditional love, acceptance, and a safe place to talk about whatever is bothering me today, whether it's an alcoholic or just somebody I don't agree with, and usually it's the latter, or both of them. What I also learned, I was told to go to 6 meetings before deciding whether Al-Anon is right for me. And I was also told to not make any big life decisions or life-altering decisions in the first 6 to 12 months. And I had had a lot of change in my life already in the years leading up to that point where I walked through those doors. I had taken a new job, moved my family from Cincinnati to here, moved into a rental house, moved into another house. So a lot of that change was very chaotic and hard to manage. And I think that I felt like I couldn't get through that without him, even though things were so bad in our relationship. And really, as I was hyper-focused on his drinking, the real problem was my fear. Fear of being a single mother. Fear that I couldn't do it. And my little plan of not being financially dependent on a man didn't pan out because I was always in a financial position to leave him. But I was scared that I wasn't enough. And I accepted a lot of unacceptable behavior. And I dished out a lot of unacceptable behavior, too. So 18 months after our last move, I decided that it was time. And that really, interestingly enough, I believe that God speaks to me through other people. I haven't seen any burning bushes lately. But other people are a mirror for me, and he shows me what I need to see. That's another thing that I learned from my sponsor, that God will allow me to see what I need to see when I need to see it, and he will allow me to hear what I need to hear when I need to hear it, and not a moment before. I don't have to be a detective. That's part of how the disease affected me. Like, if I was going to catch him in wrong and punish him for it, I had to be on my game. I had to be prepared to follow him anywhere, all around town, and find him and drag him back home, which I tried to do. I'll go ahead and share this. I'm not sure why it's coming up, but one of my proudest moments during that period of chaos, and I see it now as one of my lows. You know, I hear about people hitting bottom before they ask for help. For me, it wasn't one. It was more like cha-chunk, 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 cha-chunk. And you know, they show us this V in recovery that talks about, you know, the downward fall of the alcoholic, and then also on the inside what our behaviors are to mirror that. And I saw myself in all of those. So when I hit that bottom and I decided I wanted a way up, I was like prepared for the V to look like this, right? Perfect straight line. I have a chemistry degree and I like straight lines. But it hasn't been that way either. My way up has been like this, and what is it? One step forward, two steps back. Maybe it's two steps forward, one step back. But instead of seeing those as setbacks today, I like to think that as a cha-cha or a dance or an Al-Anon, as we call it, the Al-Anon waltz, which is steps one through three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, because step one is admitting that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. And my life was unmanageable. So back to my detective work, one night he texted me. I was at church in Wilkes County where my family is from, and I'm sitting there, I get this text. I don't know if he said he was in a hotel or he wasn't coming home or whatever it was, but I went crazy. So I showed it to my aunt, and I start crying, and then she arranges me to talk to the pastor afterwards. And I told him the short story, which is kind of amazing because I don't really know any short stories. But you know, told him that I was considering giving my husband an ultimatum again, and he said something very valuable to me. He said, "Joy, God hates divorce. He doesn't hate divorced people." And I think that I needed to hear that because of my religious upbringing. I needed to hear that validation from a member of the clergy. But what I proceeded to do when I walked out of there was stalk my husband down at the hotel that he was at, walking down the halls, calling his cell phone that he wouldn't answer, trying to hear it so I could find out what room he was in. And I was proud of that. Like, I was at some good detective work because I got my man that night. I found him, but I couldn't get him home because I am powerless over the behavior of others. So what it's like today, I am so grateful to be here today. I am so grateful to Al-Anon and to my beautiful sponsor, Elizabeth, who has held my hand every step of the way and is the first person in my life who truly exemplified unconditional love for me and for my family and for my alcoholic. I can remember reading that in a meditation one day about unconditional love, and I called her, and I was so confused by that concept. I said, "Are you telling me I have to love him unconditionally? That's not the way it works. There are all these conditions in marriage to behavior and what's appropriate and not." But that got me thinking, and it's been such a process and such a journey. I'm so grateful the things that I've learned in Al-Anon from just sitting down and listening. And wisdom can come from anybody, from someone who has 20 years of recovery and somebody who has 2 days. Because I learned something, as long as my eyes are open and I'm willing to pay attention, I learn something at every single meeting. So what I do today to continue to grow in my program of recovery, I go to my home group meeting every week that I'm in town. I do service. I work the steps. I keep in touch with my sponsor. And on any given day, my execution of all of that is better or worse, depending on what's going on. But that's the beauty of Al-Anon. It's a daily program, one day at a time. If I get overwhelmed by anything, then I'm looking way out into the future. All I have to do is get through today. And I've been successful at getting through every single day so far. I heard somebody say that, like, my track record for getting through tough times is 100% because I'm still here. And that's a pretty good record. I'm so grateful to Al-Anon. That's just what I want to conclude with, because I really do feel like it saved my life. And I'm grateful to my sponsor for continually pointing me back to God, because I didn't know how to pray when I got here. Prayer was mandatory in my home growing up, but I didn't know how to do it. Maybe I knew a few prayers of desperation or God bless this food, but I didn't know how to connect that and to have a true relationship with a God of my understanding. So today, the answer to any of my questions are usually go to a meeting or pray, and that's worked well so far. I'd like to just close today with a prayer that I saw recently from a friend. Sarah Bessie is the author of this book called Out of Sorts, and the prayer is entitled Benediction. May we be the ones who don't give up on radical inclusion. May we remember to whisper to one another every now and then on purpose at the right time, you belong here. There's room for you. There's room for all of us. We are part of the temple in which God is quite at home. Patience and faith belong together. May you remember that you have so much to learn and treat the people in your life as your teachers. Everything you do in your life can be a testimony to the goodness and freedom and openness of our God. May we be the ones who hold the doors open for others, who hold hands, who hold faces, who hold secrets for one another, who hold space for the pain and the brilliance, who hold the light and the salt, the complexity and the simplicity, the silence and the storm, the ones who hold our opinions loosely and yet love ferociously. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here today and for listening to me.
Thank you, Joy.
Thank you, Homer.
Joy and I will be available.
I turned mine off.
I think you did.
We'll be back here next week with two AA speakers, a woman from one of the groups and a young man from the young people's group. And thank you very much. And let's close with the serenity prayer. Where you are, if you'll just stand. Let's have a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you for this opportunity.